This is a podcast from the people behind the world's longest running football fans podcast, The Celtic Underground. You can subscribe and listen anywhere that you get your podcasts. You can have a free subscription where this lands straight in your email inbox, and you can go to thecelticunderground.substack.com. You can also have a paid subscription where you get some additional content, including the In Conversation podcast every week end and the Celtic Written, which is basically a rehash of the E-Tim's Rumour Mill, oops, from Glen Tintin from years ago. Anyway, this is me, Harry Brady, with this week's podcast.
Welcome to Celtic Underground, and as you can tell, it's not the emollient tones of Brian, Harry, Brady, Gilmore, but it's rather the unemollient tones, if there was such a word, of me, Andrew, and I'm here with, and I'll need to do it again, Matthew, hail, hail, history, Mar. Matthew, great to see you, and we're going to be looking at what's gone past. It's like a bit like Scrooge. You know, we're going to the three kind of spirits, past, present, future. So we're looking at last Saturday and we're going to look ahead to, well, it should be a title. Well, it might take about 3 weeks, but there you go. How are you, Matthew?
I'm fine, yeah, I'm absolutely fine. Talking about Saturday, I thought Saturday was great. I mean, I thought it was actually a really strange day because we didn't play especially well. And especially in the first half, you know, where Hearts had a lot of chances. And then somehow you found yourself 3-0 up at the break.
I know.
And, you know, I think there's some games when you're that go ahead and you go, God, if anything, it should be more, but we definitely deserve three. Saturday was a really strange one. But I think after the disappointment when we'd lost, when we'd lost 2 weeks beforehand, I think all that really mattered at that point was sort of steady the ship, get back on winning ways. And that was exactly what happened. So, you know, three games to go. Slight pity Dundee couldn't hang on Saturday. You know, you could have won it just before the split. But at the end of the day, the only thing that counts at the very end is not so much when you get over the line, but you get over the line. And one way or another, we're three games away from that now. So
definitely. I mean, I couldn't believe how cold it was or how cold it got. I come in, we park our car about half an hour away, so it's half hour walk there and back. And because it gets you, I mean, we're home by quarter to six. I'm sitting on the couch by quarter to six, you know, which is incredible because it only takes about 10 minutes but when I come in, my wife says to me, what's wrong with you? What's wrong with your face? Because it was really red. And I said, it's weather beaten. I've got a weather beaten face because that was the kind of day it was. See, your purple hands and all that, I thought, I was cursing I didn't have gloves. It was a really weird day.
Obviously, I do the walking tours. I did a walking tour before the game.
That's right. You're talking about it.
And it was... Do you know what? The funny thing is, for all it wasn't great weather on Saturday, it was actually better than I thought. So, obviously, I do the match day pub walking tours. And we go from Royal Exchange Square via a couple of pubs up to Celtic Park. And all week I was looking at the forecast and it was just getting steadily and steadily worse, and you thought, this is going to be absolutely terrible. And cold though it was, and because it was wet as well, it wasn't too bad. I actually was expecting the rain to be worse. So I think on the end, I think expecting a disaster and then just getting a wee bit of rain wasn't too bad. But you're right, it wasn't the most memorable of days. Still, a couple of pints after it warmed everyone up. So
yeah, and what are you walking past? When were you walking past
the London Road?
London Road police station.
Don't go that way. Don't go, actually. There's a set route and it doesn't take us that way. I was curious to see it. But no, we were quite far away at that point. I think we were still in one of the pub stops that we do at about the same time as that protest was happening. So it wasn't something I've seen. I've seen some of the stuff online since, but didn't actually get a chance to see it on the day itself. But
yeah, because I was wondering, because I hadn't seen too many pictures of, obviously, the kind of conditions might have dampened the kind of revolutionary ardour as regards the kind of police.
Yeah. Because I didn't see... I think inevitably, if it had been better weather, I imagine more people would have gone. I think, to some extent, it didn't really matter the sort of size of crowd. I think that the people complaining, you know, quite understandably to some extent.
Yeah.
There's absolutely a right. There's absolutely a need for policing. There's absolutely a need for law, for the rule of law. But there's also, quite rightly, you know, the rule of law is not just you can't do this. The rule of law is meant to provide protection as much as punishment where required. And that means that people's rights are meant to be protected. And I think the scenario where we just sort of say, well, we've decided we're going to effectively arrest a group of people, hold you for hours on end, isn't a particularly tolerable thing. So I can understand the need to protest. I can understand why people do. I think it was, there's an element of the Green Brigade and anyone who was there were on a bit of a hiding to nothing. They weren't really ever going to get a particularly sympathetic airing. So whether 10,000 had turned out or whether, you know, a couple of hundred had turned out, you were always going to get just a brief mention and then it'll be forgotten. And that's the reality, unless Celtic are willing to do something about it. Obviously, Celtic have commissioned this group that say they are going to do research into it. I can't quite decide if that's a genuine attempt to find a solution, find some sort of way through, or just a sort of, well, this will buy off the story. You know, the story will die within a few days. Here's an announcement and we can just go away and forget about it.
I was trying to remember, because this is the second kind of independent kind of report they've commissioned. What was the outcome of the first? Can you remember?
No, and I think that maybe answers the point. No, I think the honest answer is, look, there's always going to be, you can go back to Celtic's earliest days, there's always going to be tension between fans groups, the official club, policing and all the rest of it. I mean, it doesn't matter, you know, if we go another 1,000 years and we're still playing football, that 1,000 years from now, that same thing will still be happening. There will always be tension between those sort of different groups. But I think you need to know, and it's not even just the Celtic issue. You know, when the fans against criminalisation stuff and the Offensive Behaviour at Football Act, the reason that fell was the fact it wasn't just about Celtic and Rangers, albeit that they were the obvious primary targets. You know, to bring in scenarios, to bring in laws that are badly put together. You know, I think what killed the Offensive Behaviour Act was...
It was bad law. It was just bad law.
Well, it was the number of judges who quite openly said, I'm not going to prosecute. I'm not going to allow a prosecution here because quite clearly this doesn't meet... You know, quite clearly this doesn't meet any sort of actual criteria and is very badly defined. And I think with this one, obviously there's been talk about illegal action. I think it'll be interesting if that does come to fruition, because I think if they go to court, it's going to be very difficult to see how the police defend it. Now, I'm not a policeman. I'm not a lawyer. Maybe there is a justification, but on the face of it, and I know you're only hearing to some extent one side of a story, you know, obviously one side's promoting is being heard more than another as a Celtic supporter. It doesn't seem particularly positive. But I mean,
no, I think, I mean, knowing, I know quite a few people in kind of legal circles and they're pretty convinced it won't stand up. If it's challenged, it won't survive a proper legal challenge. That's what my hope was, that the Green Brigade somehow kind of muster resources, legal resources now, you know, rather than just like a protest or whatever. Actually, you need to challenge this in the only kind of way that the police will be brought to heel is through taking it through the courts. But this is an overreach. I mean, it seems a gross overreach of police powers. But when you look at it, I mean, in my day-to-day work, I work with the Quakers. I don't know if you saw what happened to the Quakers, did you, down in London?
Yeah, I did, actually, yeah.
Yeah.
It's one of those, it's just because, obviously, Quakers don't make the headlines very often.
No.
Obviously, I mean, there was quite a few headlines that actually feature, you know, the Quakers heavily in it. And I think you're right. They're not a group that you associate with sort of...
God, you couldn't meet a more peace-loving... You couldn't meet a more peace-loving kind of group. Like, they're getting stormed. Their meeting's getting stormed by kind of 30 Met police.
No, absolutely. So this isn't... And I think... I don't know. I have this sort of issue that part of the problem, I think, in our society... I mean, we're getting away from football now, you know, to some extent. But as a society, I think we move slightly more towards a fascist-type society for the simple reason that I think most people that talk about fascism often don't really understand what they're talking about. I think they often, when people say they're not fascist, they often mean they're not racist, which is obviously a very good thing to
yeah.
But often, you know, I think both sides, left and right, in so many of modern discourse, are determined to stop the other protesting. They're not determined to say you're wrong, but they're determined to take away that right. And I think that is a huge problem, because all that you do, the more that both sort of political ideologies encroach on the other, and encroach on everyone's right to protest, everyone's right to free speech, I think that becomes a hugely difficult issue. And I think at times left and right do it, people are quite happy. It's often like in the context of football, and I'm sure Celtic can do this as well, but other fans will probably have sort of laughed at what happened with the Green Brigade on the day of the Rangers game. And that's fine until it's you at some point.
Yeah.
And that's where I think the problem comes, that it's very easy to go, oh, that's not my team, screw Celtic, screw Rangers, or whatever else the case may be. But actually, at some point, you do need to think, well, this is the sort of the starting point. But at some point, you know, I mean, there was trouble at smaller scale to some extent, but outside the Hearts and Hibs game, you know, I've seen various yep. bits of footage at the Edinburgh Derby of, you know, like shouting back and forth. Now, at that point, you might say it's not the same, but it won't take too much to say, well, this is what they've done in Glasgow. That's
yeah, especially with a kind of, especially with a kind of national police force.
Absolutely, yeah. So, but in any case, such is politics for another day.
Sorry, I didn't mean to, that digression, but we like to be a wee bit, little bit of politics, Celtic Underground, you know, for the older kind of, you know what I mean, intelligentsia that always like grew up with our politics very fiercely, kind of baked in with Thatcher and all that. We're all Thatcher's children. But I mean, what did you think of this, the kind of start, if we talk about the game? I thought there was a hangover from the Rangers game, even the way they started. The jitteriness was still there for the first 5 or 10 minutes.
Yeah, I think that there's no question, as I said, the opening goal, I know this is obviously true, the first goal is really important in a game, but I think it was really especially important on
Saturday. Oh, yeah.
Because as you say, we were jittery, we were playing... Hearts were obviously playing with a really high line and forcing us back. And we weren't coping with it well. You know, you've got a keeper who did well, but you've got a keeper in for his first game.
Yep.
You've got Navroki that's obviously still, to some extent, an unknown quantity. And you've got, let's face it, a defence that at times, when we do this playing at the back, including this season, we've seen us giving away really sort of daft goals. So I think there was definitely that worry. Obviously, Hearts had chances. I mean, you know, I mean, they missed some really big chances, one or two, which they probably should have scored. And if either of those go in, yeah, I think it does become more nervy. On balance, you think you would still win. But I think what's interesting has been reading some of the sort of the Hearts commentary on the game is that, as I say, Hearts started well, albeit in the second half, then sat back for understandable reasons. But
yeah, they didn't even want to pace them.
Yeah, most of the Hearts fans that I've sort of read just weren't happy with the game at all. Now, maybe that's one of those, you look at it retrospectively and you got beat, but I think they sort of take the view, you almost forget the fact that Hearts started well and all you focus on is, well, we lost, we sat back completely in the second half. So I wouldn't say we were lucky. I think on balance, we were clearly the better team, but I think certainly in the opening half an hour, if Hearts had scored at any point then, and certainly if they'd gone ahead, I think there would have been a much bigger spread of nerves. Whereas we get the first, and from there, you just sort of settle into it.
And the phenomenon that Daizen Maeda has become, eh? It's like, I thought it was really interesting. And it was also instructive as well, the way that Rodgers talked about the variety now of his finishes. It looks quite simple. He's the way he just kind of plants it or the guides it into the corner. But that's a terrific finish, a terrific move, and terrific finish.
Yeah.
And they're great goals.
Great goals, and obviously the header as well. I mean, like when he hit the header just from the angle I was at, I thought that's and I was on in my head going right, perfect hat trick time. He scored with one foot. He's now about to score with a header. Is he going to get not just another hat trick this season, but the perfect one? But oh, he has been. I mean, I think. It's funny. I mean, I really, really like Maeda. And even before the sort of rise, it was funny. We were out, a group of us, before Christmas, and we had these sort of strange arguments where half the group was Nicholas Coon's going to be player of the year. And the other, probably a little bit under half actually, including myself, were like, no, it's got to be Maida. And it's funny the way that's gone over now. I mean, one of my friends who goes on the Glenacre bus that goes in through Drumchapel, he put on one of the WhatsApp groups today. He's sort of one of the secretaries in charge of admin, and they're doing a sort of vote for who they think's player of the year. And his two options are just Daizen Maida, someone else, on the simple basis that it's not even a discussion who's going to be player of the year for the season.
I suppose he could be. He's almost like, you know, you talk about it with a particularly weak opposition, you talk about your own party as your own opposition, because it could be Daizen Maida, winger, and one, Daizen Maida, striker, as the other. You know, like, he could be he's the top two positions.
But you see, I think the interesting thing is, I mean, I mentioned Nicholas Kudner. I think what's fascinating for next season is, so let's work on the basis next season as it stands. Let's say everybody is fully fit. You would assume that we certainly keep, so Schmeichel probably, unless there's a wider, you know, unless there's a bigger injury problem. And again, assuming nobody leaves, it would be Kieran Tierney, it would be Alistair Johnston, it would be Trusty, and it would be Carter Vickers. You know,
is
as
that changing
back,
now? But do you know what I wondered?
Well, you could put Navroki in there, I mean, possibly, but it almost doesn't matter, because whether it's Trusty, whether it's Navroki, it doesn't really change the general shape or anything like that. The only scenario would be if you decided you wanted to play almost a Martin O'Neill type system of having three centre halves and playing Kieran Tierney and Johnston as more wing backs. That would be the only potential.
But then the width, he looks for the width. You know, you wouldn't then play, you know, you don't play two wingers when you play a kind of 3-5-2.
Sort of the point I was getting at.
Sorry.
No, that's actually my point, that for next season, whether you play, if you keep the four at the back as it is, that's fine. You just keep it as it is. If you do try a 3-5-2, then you're right. You don't need the two wingers anymore. And that then raises the question, where do you change it? Now, I think Maida through the middle has so far proven fantastic. Kuhn's definitely fallen out of things. Doesn't write him off forever, but he's clearly fallen out of things. And I wonder the extent to which, over the summer, does Rodgers begin to say, well, it's not so much I want to go and sign players to fit in the exact same current shape just to, you know, be subs or reserves or anything, but is it actually I want to look at the shape? There's no, the quest, our problem, including the League Cup final, our problem versus Rangers has been that Rangers have largely overcome our shape. Rangers can to some extent offset us. They slightly changed in the last game, but they very much, their fullbacks have been sitting back. They've not been pressing with the intention of taking our wingers out of the game. Because if we play the three up front, if we play effectively a 4-3-3, if you nullify the wingers and your centre forward doesn't come back, then you've given up the midfield, which is to some extent what we've been doing. And Rodgers has shown this season in Europe that he is ultimately willing to learn and change. We've only got one more game against Rangers this season. I know, obviously, we want to win. It is ultimately a game that, in the grand scheme of things, isn't going to decide anything. He might try something different there, or he might wait till next season. But I do wonder if, because Maida is such a different option through the middle than Ida, and even Kyogo, although there's more similarities, does Rodgers over the summer look to bring in one or two that are not just a question of, let's keep playing the exact same shape? You know, if plan A doesn't work, let's try more of plan A. Does he look at one or two signings that would allow you to play something substantially different?
Yeah, possibly. But I mean, what we even see from, you said about Kuhn kind of dropping off, it's quite marked. You can look at, he got an assist at the weekend. I think that's only his third assist in the past almost 3 months. Two goals and three assists. When you think about what he did over the first, like, 3 months of the season, that is a significant drop off. And to me, maybe it's wrong, and I know we shouldn't look like we're always looking, trying to be body language experts or trying to analyse kind of expressions, facial expressions, but it looks to me there's a slight disengagement. I don't know, is that just me or do you?
I don't know. I think it's easy to look at these things and from without actually knowing anything inside, sort of put two and two together and assume, you know, that you're getting four when in fact you're getting 47 or something else like that. I don't know is the honest answer. I get the strong impression that he is a sort of, as is true of all players, I suppose, but he's a confidence player. The best thing he did was the European goal, you know, earlier this season. You know, when he just, you know, he cut in, it was such finish. And I think that, although he was playing quite well at that point, I think that really boosted him, because he suddenly, he wasn't just doing quite well in Scotland, he was now scoring at the top level in Europe. And I think that really boosted him. And I think since then, he's just maybe lacks a bit of confidence. I mean, my dad said it to me at the weekend, especially when it was 3-0, he's like, there was a couple of times it fell to Kuhn and he just went, hit it. Because I think that's maybe what he needs, you know. If he the assist helps him, but if he had just managed to get a goal on, it doesn't even have to be spectacular. If he had just sort of, if it had bounced in off his backside from a corner, just enough that he could leave the pitch thinking, oh, I've done better. Everyone does it, you know. It doesn't matter what level you're at. I still play football. I mean, well, more accurately, I still run randomly about the park without doing very much. But you know yourself, if you play and you score one week, you play better the following week because you leave the pitch the previous time.
Oh, yeah, I see it with my boy.
He did better. I suspect there's a bit of that. But
yeah, because you wonder now, I mean, what was great for me, because I'm a bit of a kind of acolyte when it comes to seeing me, Jamesy Forrest, he has to get this goal. He has to get a league goal this season to keep
doesn't
that
need to
going.
Be a league goal. Could be a Scottish Cup goal.
Well, I tend to just look at the league, because I think he would, I don't think there would be anybody in his path if he got, would be the 17th season,
so
would it?
He's cut, no. So Forrest is on 15. So Forrest is 15, sorry, 15. The record is Jimmy McMenemy on 18. So if Forrest scores this season, he's on 16. And if he scores under his contract extension, he gets 17. I have to say, I suspect that'll be his last contract. So I don't think he's got the potential, probably, to catch McMenemy. Albeit that would be quite funny. But let's face it, at the start of this season, I actually wrote an article saying, brilliant, well done, James Forrest, for your 16th goal. And I wrote it in August because I thought, it must be ready. At some point this season, I'm going to need this article. And the fact that we're kicking into April now, and you're still... Obviously, the injury was what really killed him. But yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I think
he looked good. He looked good when he came on.
It was the worst one was that game we got the penalty. Was it against Hibs? And he won it. And,
yes.
And he didn't score it. And Rodgers afterwards was asked about it and basically sort of said, oh, we hadn't really realised. And it was obvious the way he said that. Yeah, we would have absolutely told Forrest to take the penalty. So I'm at the point of American football. I'd just have him on the bench, and if we get a penalty, I would just bring him on to take the penalty.
As long as it's not a kind of Aaron Ramsey style, bring him on for a penalty.
Well, that's the one potential threat. That's the one threat. But you just hope I think as well, you hope he doesn't chase it, because I think the worst that can happen, I always thought the problem with Tony Cascarino was that with Cascarino, he was getting so desperate for a goal. And it wasn't just him. The team were getting desperate for him to score. And there was times where, I can vividly remember the Cascarino time. And you remember times where they would play the bottom and you thought, that was madness. You should not have given that to him. You should have scored it yourself. And I think there comes a point where, like, if Forrest doesn't score, it's hardly the end of the world. You know, he still had an amazing career. He still got a fairly remarkable run of 15 seasons in a row.
Yeah.
But if you want him to score, I think you just have to play him normally and hope that, you know, the ball just does what he's done, you know. And at the end of the day, you don't score 15 consecutive seasons for Celtic without being somebody that knows ultimately how to find the position. But, yeah.
By the way, we were talking about, sorry, I'm obsessed by the Premier era, I call it, across all clubs. Because I did a panel when he got to 13. Because there wasn't that, it was like, I think ahead of him then was Paul McStay and Billy Dodds, Ali McCoist. But I actually think he's got, I think if he gets to 16, I'm not sure if any of them did 16 consecutive. So in terms of, if you look at in terms of league seasons.
Right. I'm not sure when it comes to league seasons. Certainly, certainly though, that if you count all competitions, he's sitting on 15 just now. And hopefully...
Because his first one was a league goal. It was a league goal. So
it was his debut. It was his debut. The game he scored. So he's currently joint with Jimmy Quinn and Patsy Gallagher on 15.
Right.
If he gets one more.
But Paul McStay, would
he's joint with Paul McStay if he gets the goal. So McStay and Jimmy McGrory are on 16. Then it's Bobby Lennox on 17. And it's Jimmy McMenemy on 18. As I say, his contract would, in theory, if he scores this season and next season, his contract takes him up to equal Lennox on 17. But I'd be sceptical if he got another contract. I suspect that this is, you know, that one he signed. I think he's got this year and next season, and then
he can
pack up.
Is he 32 or 33 now? Let me think.
I'm not sure his exact age.
Yeah.
I don't know the exact age.
I think he might be 30. Somebody said that they like us checking things, but it's better to check it than no check it. You know, it's like,
he's certainly comfortably into his 30s now.
33.
So,
you're right.
He's got, I think, especially as a winger, if he gets this season and next season, especially a guy that's obviously just been out with injuries, I think that's his job. You know, if he's 35 for a winger, that's probably as good as anything. A time to, and I don't think, you know, I think sometimes you've got players that have played in certain positions where you think you could be adapted. Forrest's strength was always on the wing. He was for a long time. I know now we've got Jota and Quinn. He was the one winger we had who was willing to actually beat a man. You know, everyone else sort of wanted to sort of pass the way through.
He still was on Saturday, and he still had that week and a half yard. Actually, I was quite impressed because you always worry about him. And he'll be 34. He'll be 34 in July. So you're right.
Right. So yeah, you've got this year and next season, and then that takes him to 35. And I think that would be him. The one thing I would say is though, for his, I like him on the right. I think the problem is he's very right footed, and at times. So he's very one-footed, and at times I think playing on the left I don't think works particularly well. I think he's easier to take it. I know he can cut in, but to me putting him on the right actually works more, because when he came on Saturday and he was on the left, my first thought was, right, he's not getting the goal today.
Although, as I say, he had a few, he can burrow in, he does burrow in.
Mm-hmm.
He does burrow in, but I know what you mean. He's more likely to have that element of unpredictability on the right, whereas will he come in, or he can actually hit the byline, as you say?
Yeah, we've got 9 games to go this season, hopefully. We've definitely got 8, we've maybe got 9, hopefully, if we beat St Johnstone and get to the cup final. So you hope that, you know, hopefully he doesn't need to come on in the last minute of the Scottish Cup to try and do it. But
I'm demanding a league one just for these other ones. I'm pursuing my own agenda. So as I can... I used to always like when I was able to write a stat and it was like across all clubs, you know, like rather than just a Celtic kind of record, you know what you say? In the Premier Era, that's what I'm obsessed with. Because the Premier Era did mean something different. It's not like the English Premier League Era where they just renamed it. And in Scotland's Premier Era, teams playing each other 4 times, that's a dramatic difference from what existed before.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you, as a historian, I don't know if you'd agree with me there. You're just looking at me like blankly.
No, I would agree. I think you're absolutely right. One of the problems, I think, in general, when you try and compare people in the past, is that it is so different. You know, I mean, if you go back to the first time we won the league, we only played 18 games because there was 10 teams in the league that season. You played home and away. And that was your 18. And then, if you should say, once you get into the sort of the 1920s and so on, when you, it feels like basically every single team in Scotland is in the top league. It's so funny when you, I always think what's really funny is when you look at just the size of leagues. So if you go back and look early and you look at the number of teams in the league, say in the 1890s, and then you jump, and it just seems to get bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. You also, I suppose, get into debates. I mean, one of the reasons Jimmy McGrory's on 16. Is one of Jimmy McGrory's goals comes in the, it's actually the very end of the season. So Jimmy McGrory was on loan for season at Clydebank, so didn't play for Celtic, but he came back right at the very end of the season and played in the Charity Cup. So the Charity Cup in those days was only played at the end of the season. It was basically largely a May tournament, and he played in one of those games and scores. Because a lot of people used to say, "Oh, McGrory didn't do it 16 in a row." Because, you know, because he was on loan for one of them. He was on loan but came back. And I think you get into sort of problems about what do you count as games? Do you count Charity Cup games? And you might say, well, no. But then it's not very fair because Jimmy McGrory didn't play when there was a League Cup, for example. There was
no football. And the Glasgow Cup, and it's like, when people talk about counting the Glasgow Cup, I always say, well, when do you stop counting the Glasgow Cup? I mean, I was there in the 90s at Celtic when it became a youth tournament. Mm-hmm. So, but, you know, when you look back in the team that 86, as soon as his first game and all, and you look back in the team, I mean, Paul McStay's like first teams that are playing in that Glasgow Cup final, horrible night.
Not everyone agrees. I personally take the view, if it was considered by the standards of the time a genuine competition, and if it was a first team, then I think you have to sort of count it, you know. I know that's slightly difficult, but it's like, you know, Celtic's first ever trophy was the North Eastern Cup. Hardly a big, mammoth, important competition in Scottish history. But it was for Celtic at that point. You know, Celtic were, you know, we won it in our first season, and I'm sure they would have cared about it. You know, I mean, nobody compares with the European Cup decades on, but at that time it mattered. You know, and the reality is, in the early years of the club, most games we played were friendlies. I mean, even by the time the league starts, when we first win the title in 1893, we played 60 games that season, and half of them were friendlies. So, you know, we tell ourselves, oh, it was only a friendly. But in the context of the time, it wasn't.
Yeah.
And whilst you can say, well, we don't count friendlies, that's probably an easier ground. I think if we played in a competition and it was considered important, you know, no one's seriously suggesting we count the Dubai Cup win in the 1980s as some mammoth and, you know, huge event in club history. But, yeah, I think the other ones, the charity.
Over the 10 at sixes, I can tell you. I get pages out of that, the Celtic View. It mattered. I tell you, it mattered. See, we were sitting there that night. Thank the Lord, we've got a trophy. We've got a trophy to talk about.
Yeah. Between that and Steve Fulton winning the Youth Cup, that's what I always picture as the BP Youth Cup. But there's not obviously a huge amount else that you can, you can celebrate at that time.
The Daily Express, what was that? It was like the one that our colleague St Anthony's always going on about, you know, like watching it in sports and midweek sports night with Harry Carpenter or whatever, you know.
Okay,
but do you think it's just as you were in terms of going up to McDermott? Do you think is this his team now? Do you think? Because that is quite interesting. I actually thought you could tell that even he was kind of the cobwebs were coming off him even more, because I thought Narowski, I thought his passing was better on Saturday. It helps because it's almost like you can see the team when you see, oh, McGregor's there, even if they're not passing it to him. It's just his very presence.
Yeah.
But Narowski's passing, I thought, was a lot better. Out of defence, he didn't look like hot potato. What am I going to do with this?
Yeah, McGregor, I mean, obviously, Rangers are a higher level than Hearts, so you've got to factor that in. But McGregor was a huge miss against Rangers. And I know we've lost to Rangers with McGregor in the team, but I personally felt, I mean, for all that Luke McCowan tried in the Rangers game, I thought there was quite a few times, from the angle I sit at, I thought there was quite a few times when players looked up and the smart ball, the potentially attacking ball the smart ball was inside to the central midfielder and it would have opened up opportunities on the other wing. And then, in fact, they looked up and it was McCowan and he was under a bit of pressure. Now, they'd have given that ball to McGregor because they would have trusted him.
Yeah.
And I felt they just didn't. And that's no criticism of McCowan. I think McCowan's been a really good signing. Just the perfect squad player. You know, no one's saying he's first choice, but I thought that was maybe a levels-wise very difficult for him. McGregor, maybe changes that. I think he will. I mean, we've got 7 league games to go. We've got definitely 1, maybe 2 Scottish Cup games. I think he's clearly said Greg Taylor will play again this season. I think the fact Bernardo's back and the fact McGregor didn't finish the game on Saturday shows Bernardo's definitely going to be in the team once he's back. McCowan will definitely get a chance as well. I'm guessing he'll play Ida at stages. So I think Saturday's starting team is probably his first choice for this really matters. But I think other than that, I think there'll probably be a fair level of rotation, especially hopefully once you write off and finish the title race.
No, you would hope so. You would hope you maybe see people getting some minutes, including wee Jamesy, to get his goal. But no, it's like what you say. What surprised me about the rain, we've talked about it in our charts, our Celtic Underground charts, but I thought Engels would would just kind of slide in to be the guy that the centre backs, he would drop back and they could, you know, he would be there to play the ball to him. But it wasn't, there was nobody actually even tried to be McGregor. That's what kind of surprised me about the Rangers game. All right, you miss McGregor, but you also miss the role that McGregor plays, the kind of orchestrating role. But it seemed like, well, he's not there, so we're not going to do that. But they didn't seem to do anything in instead. That's what kind of surprised me.
But that's what comes, I mean, I said that earlier, I think that's the problem, and I think it's what Rangers to some extent have worked out the last few games against us. It's slightly worked in the League Cup final. I know we still scored three, but I thought that they nullified us to some extent. Obviously, we were hugely poor at Ibrox, and then we weren't great 2 weeks ago. On another day, you might have scored the winner. To be honest, towards the end, it was a bit of a freak winner. On another day, you know, despite having been 2-0 down, only one team really looked like winning. Obviously, that wasn't how it worked out in the end, but only one team looked like it. But I think the problem that we had was they've worked out that if we've got three forwards, if you can take them out and flood the midfield, and that was what we were doing. Now, you're right, if Engels had sat deeper, that might have slightly helped, but I think the reality was that that was just a game where McCowan, as much as I genuinely like McCowan, you know, he's clearly limited. You know, he's not a multi-million pound signing. Hitati, let's face it, this season especially, has been enormously hot and cold. He can do something remarkable, but if he's out the game, then he's really, he doesn't really offer a huge amount extra. Kuhn, as we say, hasn't been great. And if you take those players out, then it's no surprise that Rangers are going to flood you, that Rangers are going to make chances and all the rest of it. And again, don't get me wrong, I don't want to lose to them, but I would much rather, you know, we've played Rangers four times so far this season. Two of them really, really mattered.
Yeah.
First league game of the season, because the first league game was the one that really set down a marker and allowed us to build a lead. And the cup final. Now, if you told me we were going to win two and lose two, I'd have done it exactly.
They're the two. And I think there's part of that they went into both the other games being 16 points ahead.
I honestly, right, this probably, if you were a Rangers fan listening to this, what I'm awaiting.
I know what you're going to say, and I agree with you.
Sounds a bit like sour grapes, but I honestly think that part of our problem against Rangers this season has been we don't really take them seriously. You know, we're going to Ibrox miles ahead. They're coming to Parkhead and we're miles ahead. And we're psychologically, now that's something we do need to address, and it's something you don't want to carry on, because at some point they will, it will be a harder game. But I honestly think part of our problem has been that we sort of treat it a bit like we're playing Hearts today.
Yeah.
It might work, it might not. And we're not up for it in a way that perhaps we have to be, because we don't really.
They'll be up for this next one, like a famous last words for me. You can clip that, like a Rangers brethren. But I mean, do you know what? When you think about, if we're mentioning the Rangers word, but Barry Ferguson has managed Rangers seven times. Five of those games he's found himself 2-0 down. Only one of those games he's ever been 2-0 up against an opponent. Celtic. It's bonkers.
I don't know. I think, in fairness, again, the one thing that Brendan Rodgers did that annoyed me before the game 2 weeks ago was when he sort of made the joke about, like, I don't really see anything different.
Yeah.
And I really, really didn't like that. And I didn't like it because it sort of smacked a bit of complacency. It sort of smacked a wee bit of arrogance, to be honest. An element of, ha-ha. And that's great if you then win. If you go and win, everyone laughs. But if you don't, I think you need that. You know, I spent, no harm to yourself, Andrew, and your Celtic View background, but my used to always talk about in the 90s the concept of Celtic View syndrome. And the Celtic View syndrome was these players that kept losing to Rangers would keep popping up. It didn't have to be in the View. It could be in the record going, the next time, we're going to show Rangers next time. And I remember, and you were like, stop talking. Like, see if you win, come out and gloat afterwards. But you see this idea, we're going to do this. And I felt when Rodgers made that joke about Rangers before it, because Ferguson, bizarrely, for all we might laugh at Ferguson, a lot of people will criticise Ferguson. Ferguson said everything right in the lead up to the Celtic Park game. He spoke about how difficult a game it was going to be, how he didn't underestimate how difficult it was. he sort of did the right thing. Whereas we, now I know at the end of the day, it mattered more to them in the sense of getting some level of pride. We didn't want to lose, but it doesn't affect where the title's going to go. But I don't like it. The minute Roger said that, I said to one of my mates when we met before the game, I said, I just, there's a bit that puts a doubt into my head that we're taking this that seriously. Because Brendan Rodgers would never make that joke ahead of playing Real Madrid. You know, if we were playing Real Madrid in the Champions League and they'd changed their boss, he wouldn't even make a joke back. Well, I don't think they've really improved, because he would take it more seriously.
Do you know that an element within that, why he does that? Because he knows in his heart of hearts, he's never going to be a Martin O'Neill or an Ange Postecoglou in the eyes of the support. So any kind of brownie points, where do you get the most brownie points? By sticking it to them, you know, by mocking them. Mm-hmm. So it's half a chance for him to think, oh, here, I can say something that the supporters will like me for. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, good old Brendan kind of thing. Whereas he knows, you know, if anything even slightly goes awry, then he doesn't have that kind of reservoir of goodwill.
Mm-hmm.
So it's almost like he's trying too hard to play to the gallery. And that's one of those occasions when you can play to the gallery. That was my reading of it.
I think you're probably right. I think there's probably an element of truth to that. You're right, there will always be a... He's always going to have that, but you left. Aura. You know, for a lot of the support, you know, there remains lots of the support that, you know, love him. But there are, I mean, there's lots of boys I go to the game with that are still raging that he's back.
No, and it's bonkers. I don't subscribe to that myself, but
there's definitely a portion of the support. And I think you're right. If we suddenly were actually under pressure, then, yeah, he probably would face difficulty. I mean, the reality is, if he wants to be thought of in the same way as Martin O'Neill, all we really need is a European Cup final. You know, any sort of European final would achieve.
Well, according to Brian, it's coming in the next 10 years. But, you know, what I always say to him on that one, what does that mean? You want them to kind of throw a kind of qualifier, a Champions League qualifier? Because you don't get... Look at the last eight in the Champions League. After all these, we talked about how fresh it is and how different it is, all for the top five leagues. Nobody made it through. Nobody made it through the real kind of business end from outside of the top.
There's now a weird contradiction for Celtic in the sense that the only way to really advance in Europe is to be in the Champions League and to get that income. But it then prevents you. You know, we've now got a team. I think that this is a Celtic team. I think we've shown this season, especially the Leipzig performance. If we were still in the Europa League, then... Absolutely, I'd think that we could have a go. I'm not saying we would win it, but
you'd be one of the dark horses. You'd be one of the ones that people would want to avoid.
But we're in that weird setting where the reason we are at that level is because of the Champions League money. And the only way to be in the Europa scenario is to not have the Champions League money. Because obviously, as you say, there's no longer the parachute. And it's the one problem of the way that the revamp's done. You are permanently locked into either...
Yeah, you can't, which is right. Which is right. It was ridiculous. Teams dropping, cascading down.
Yeah,
it's a much better, it's fairer. But it weakens.
I happen to agree. I think it's not as good for Celtic. But I think from a sporting perspective, I think you're right. I think you start a competition, and you play that competition. You don't sort of go. I mean, I don't mind at the qualifiers. I think it's different if you fall out of the qualifying stage.
Different in the qualifiers. You know, actually, the tournament hasn't started.
Yeah.
It's qualifiers.
You know, if we, you know, next season, assuming that, you know, obviously we're probably going to win the league, but assuming that we're obviously going to be in the Champions League qualifiers for this coming summer, I think if you make it through, fine. If you don't, then that's reasonable. I have no problem with going into Europa in that scenario. But yeah, I do think that once you've played a competition, you shouldn't then be able to drop down and say, oh, well, we'll win this one now instead.
And his first season, he had to go all three, didn't he? Midtjylland out in Champions League qualifiers, then a Europa League run, and then dropping down to the conference. I think they were one of the first teams to ever exit at the earliest point.
Yeah, it wasn't a great run. It wasn't a great run. I think, like I say, I think from a Champions League perspective, I don't mind if you drop at the qualifiers, but yeah, it is that slight problem that, realistically, as you say, if you look at the last eight in the Champions League, how far could we get? With a bit of luck, we could have beat Bayern Munich. I mean, that's not, you know, fanciful. Yeah. We could have gone through. I've always thought, looking at it, you could definitely make the last 16. Again, with a fair wind. I mean, that's not
yes,
a, we definitely can. You need a good bit of luck in the draw. Could you make the last eight? That's very difficult to see. And frankly, once you get to the last eight, you're just looking at, well, that's there. But I think probably the last 16 we're capable of with the right sort of, with a bit of luck and the right draw. You never know if you can make the last eight, but that's your absolute limit, realistically.
Because you look at it, Celtic, Bruges, Benfica, they'll all be patting themselves in the back over their kind of Champions League campaign, but none of them made it. You know, these are the kind of teams that you thought might, if it wasn't going to be Celtic because they drew Bayern Munich, then it might have been Bruges, it might have been Benfica, but it's just too hot to handle that. Like, and they got, like, you know, like, but it's just getting, they got to the last 16, you know, whereas Celtic only got to, obviously, the playoff for the last 16, but once it got to the last 16, that was it.
Yeah, I think, yeah, it's, as you say, it's just a different level. It's just realistic. It's like anything else. We can play Cali Thistle countless times at Celtic Park in the Scottish Cup. And realistically, we're going to win 99 of them.
Yeah.
At Celtic Park, that is, because obviously we lost up there as well. Martin O'Neill's season. That was the strangest one, being at the Liverpool game and then a few days later, you know, coming to the opposite, albeit that clearly there was a different mindset to when we lost to Cali Thistle the previous time. But the reality is, if we play Cali Thistle at Celtic Park 100 times in the Scottish Cup, we win 99 of them. But that doesn't matter, because all that matters is history. And it's the same with us in Europe. You think of the Barcelona game. We play that game again, the 2012 game. There's no scenario where we win that game 2-1 if you replay it. But it doesn't matter. All that matters is on that particular night you did do it. So you never know in Europe with a bit of luck, but I think you do reach a point where you can have all the luck in the world, but over two legs especially.
Is that the way that St Johnstone should feel about their impending kind of double against Celtic starting from Saturday?
I think
Sunday,
yeah.
Sorry, do you see any issues for Celtic? Like Brian always makes me, so I'm going to do it to you, he always makes me give him a, you've got to give a scoreline prediction. So what's your scoreline prediction?
Do you mean for Saturday or the semi?
Is it Saturday or Sunday? Is it no Sunday, no? Saturday?
Is it the weekend? I don't know, actually.
It's Sunday. It is. It's Sunday.
Is it? Right. I had it. Yeah.
It's Sunday the 6th.
I wasn't really to think of it, to be honest.
It's Sunday the 6th.
Yeah, Sunday is the 6th, yeah. Yeah, you might be right. I've just not updated my phone. I'm the same.
So Sunday.
I think if you look at St Johnstone are in a miserable state just now. I think it's going to be weird on Saturday because obviously you've got three quarters of the ground, which I suppose people had thought might have been a title party, but you know isn't now going to be. I look, famous last words, but I never like putting numbers on it, but. You know, you can't see any real problems on Saturday. I think St Johnstone are completely bereft of confidence. I think if you score any time in the opening 20 minutes, I imagine that they just go, oh, God, you know, this is, here we go again. I would think it'll be 3 or 4, nothing on Saturday. You know, at a push, they might score a late goal. They either might score a late goal when we've switched off, or they might score an early goal where we switch on, as it were. But if you told me, I would think 3 or 4 nothing, to be honest, at the weekend.
Yeah, I'm going with you. I'm going with you, yeah. Yeah. No, so look, in one step closer, so it's like...
Yeah, that's it. You get the win. You would assume the Rangers being at home that they will win. Because, I mean, that was the thing on Saturday. I never like watch... I always try and avoid Rangers games when they're on because I think I jinx it. You know, I'd much rather just...
My brother's the same. I've got to watch.
But I was out in the pub with guys after the game on Saturday. I was getting really annoyed because they kept going, it's 1-0, it's 2-0, it's 3-1. I'm like, you're jinxing this. But at 3-all, they'd sort of went, oh, that's, you know, that'd be great if they hold on. I says, well, 3-all doesn't make any difference. You know, if we're going to win the league against Kilmarnock, they actually need to lose today. So,
exactly.
To be honest, it didn't really make any difference to me whether they won or drew on Saturday, because once they got to the 3-all, assuming Dundee, although they were close Dundee to scoring again, but once they got to 3-all, it didn't really matter. I would assume they'll win this weekend.
Yeah. Although it's Hibs, it's the...
I know, I mean, it's not an easy game. I mean, Hibs are really hard. I don't know. The pessimist in me just always expects Rangers to win.
Nah, yeah, I was saying that in my family chat.
I'm often wrong, but I think you err on the side of I would much rather expect them to win.
Exactly.
Be right, and then rather than, you know, hope they lose and then be disappointed. So,
yeah.
Yeah,
but it's a shame.
A game for them, but don't get me wrong, it'd be brilliant if Hibs won and we won, and then you could win the league at Parkhead the following
exactly.
Saturday.
I know. That's a shame that... It's a shame that's not likely to be the case, because Celtic have only got 2 home games, haven't they, in their last, in the post-6 fixtures, haven't they?
Yeah.
So, therefore, they're not going to make it the first game.
Well, they might. So the only thing is, if you do the, if you go through the fixtures, so if you look at the fixtures, so you've obviously got the 5 games after the split. On the basis you're going to win the league, the last game we're going to be at home. So we're definitely going to be at home on, I think, the 17th of May.
So they'll never do 3 away games. They'll never do a home game, 3 away games, then a home game. They'll not do that.
I think we're most likely to be at home in the second game. So, but if you do the odds, right, where does the next thing you fit in is where does the Ibrox game go? So Ibrox game is not going to be first, because I wouldn't have thought. Do they want to set up the scenario where if we just avoid defeat, we've won the league?
No.
At Ibrox. Especially not with the bother of the other, you know, like with the you know, with issues and with the fans being back. So the Ibrox game isn't going to be the first one. The Ibrox game also isn't going to be the second last one, because that's a midweek game. And we're also not going to be the second last. So that then leaves the 2 Saturdays. You're right, the logical thing is probably we're away first, we're at home, we're at Ibrox the week after, we're midweek, and then we're at Parkhead on the last day. It depends to some extent. It depends, I suppose, what TV want as well. TV might, if we are 15 points ahead going into the game, going into, you know, the post-split, which as if we win the next 2 games, assuming Rangers do as well, that's what we will be clear.
Yeah.
Then do they just take the view that, sorry, not 15 points clear, sorry, 13 points clear. Do they just take the view that, well, Celtic will probably win the first game and we want it on TV?
Yeah, they've done that. If you think about it, when they went up at Tannadice under Ange, what was it last year? Like Kilmarnock, you know, like if you think under that amazing night at Kilmarnock last year. So it tends to be away from home. By and large, it tends to be.
It could easily be. I think I won't be shocked if it is.
It would be great if it wasn't. It'd be great if they really gave it a go.
That's why I did. You know, I was sort of hoping. It would be great if Hibs did something on Saturday. But look, you win the league where you win the league.
I know.
We've actually got. You know, we've not won it. You know, we tend more commonly to win it away. You know, I mean, it was actually St Anthony, obviously, who first showed me the start, but we went something like 50 years at one point and didn't win the league at Celtic Park. Going from the 1920s to the 1970s, like every single time we won the league, it was away from home. The one exception was, well, depends what you count as it, but the one in the early 70s where we won the league, it's counted as at Hampden. Although I take the view, we didn't really win the league at the Hampden one, but simply on the basis that, you know, Aberdeen could have scored 16 goals in the last game and turned it.
Yeah, oh no, you have to. I like those technicalities. I'm with you in those technicalities.
So, wherever we win it, we win it. It would have been good to have done it at home, but, you know.
And who knows? As I say, Hibs, if there's one team that you'd want to be playing Rangers right now, you think it's a team that's on the longest unbeaten run in 76 years.
My absolute plan, you know, on Saturday is to just do anything other than find out the score and hopefully turn on the radio about 5:20 to hear that, you know, Hibs' great runs continue.
You should meet my brother. A pleasure to speak to you, Matthew.
You too, Andrew.
Oh, no, it's a excuse our digressions, people, but I think they were like considered digressions, I'd like to say. Thanks a million. Right, have a good night.
Bring me sunshine in your smile.
We hope you enjoyed that podcast. There will be more along soon. Please share the joy of Celtic Underground. Rate us wherever you can find us on your podcast provision, and also subscribe to thecelticunderground.substack.com. As you'll be aware, there are two types of subscription. There's free subscription, where you get a certain amount of content delivered directly to your email address, and then there's a paid-for subscription, where you get even more content delivered directly to your email address as and when it comes out. Anyway, enough of me. We hope you enjoyed the podcast, and this is me, Harry Brady, saying goodnight and God bless. Good night.
Bring me sunshine in your smile. Bring me laughter all the while. In this world where we live, there should be more happiness. So much joy you can give to each brand new bright tomorrow. Make me happy through the years. Never bring me any tears. Let your arms be as warm as the sun from up above. Bring me fun, bring me sunshine, bring me love, sweet love. Bring me fun, bring me sunshine, bring me love.